B2. Number 2A.
Now, we start with linear thinking. In order to show you the problem which is involved in it, perhaps I can best give first a simile or whatever you may call it. Let's say you read or you take Shakespeare's Hamlet. I don't know Hamlet very well, but let's take a nice play on Hamlet. And you take that book and you cut out every sentence in that book with a scissor. And then put all those pieces of paper, each a sentence on it, into a big box. Shake it properly. And then take blindly one piece of paper out of the box, one after the other, put it next to each other until all those sentences on those pieces of paper are out of the box and nicely laid out on your table. Then you begin to read that text. Does it make sense? No, doesn't make sense. And yet, the whole of Hamlet is in it. There's not a single word missing. What makes the difference between reading Hamlet as it is printed and between reading Hamlet in the way we have cut it into pieces? The order. The order in which one sentence follows the other. It isn't therefore in the amount of words. It isn't in the way these words are put into a sentence. It's the way in which they are ordered. Can you see something wonderful which perhaps we have never thought about? That order gives information. That order makes sense. That order gives new sense, or gives a right sense, or a false sense. Therefore, it isn't the amount of words which is of any great import. It's the way how those words follow each other. How sentences follow each other. Now, the order is not printed. The words are printed. The order is not printed. Can you see that if you read the textbook, here a sentence, there a sentence, here a sentence, there a sentence, that we do exactly what we would have done with Hamlet, that we cut the whole into pieces and put another order into the textbook, and therefore those orders doesn't make sense. There is only one order that makes sense, namely the way it has been written. The way Shakespeare wrote Hamlet. The way Mrs. Eddy wrote Sights and Health. And only if we read it in its order does the right sense come out. This is very simple. And yet, do we realize what is meant by it? Do we realize that really the sense which is given by the printed word is not printed? The sense which is given is something within us which makes an order from one sentence to the next, from one statement to the next. It's we that give the order. It's we that interpret the text. The text itself does not give the interpretation. It's something within us that interprets the text. Many people think, well, if I read the text, and the text is all that there is needed, then I can understand it. No, not by a long sight. Not by a long sight. Only the interpretation gives the sense, makes sense. Now, what is interpretation? Interpretation comes from the Latin, which is interpretare, or petari, namely, to bring in between, to carry in between. That which we carry in between one word and the next word is interpretation. That which we carry in between one sentence and the next sentence is our interpretation. Therefore, the whole story of Hamlet only is really a story which makes sense if it is put in the order which it is, and only then if I carry in between those sentences the whole meaning of it. That is the reason why everybody who reads, say, Hamlet has another concept of Hamlet. He interprets it differently. That's why every conductor who conducts, say, a Mozart or a symphony, any symphony, does it differently. Because he puts in between his meaning. The notes are the same. And every conductor lets that same produce in a different way, because he puts something in between which is in him, not in the notes. He has to find out in himself what is meant with those notes. We have to find out what is meant with the whole play of Hamlet. And therefore the big professors naturally quarrel with each other and say, no, Shakespeare meant this, and the other say, no, Shakespeare meant that. And so it is with the Bible, so it is with the textbook. We have something within us that makes those bridges between a word and the next word, between one sentence and the next sentence. It isn't in the book. We put it into it. We have the interpretation within ourselves. Now, the great question is, which interpretation is right? Can anyone interpret it the way he likes? And here is the great point. Now I come back to my drawings. That one can interpret Hamlet the best way who knows the whole structure of all of Shakespeare's plays, not only of Hamlet, who can nearest think the way Shakespeare, the writer, the author, has written, was in his consciousness. Because that was, it was in Shakespeare's consciousness, he tried to convey with his words. And so only when we begin to understand the whole attitude the writer had for the whole, not only for the Hamlet, can we in some way interpret what the writer meant. Now, if we have books like the Bible and Science and Health, which have not been written by a human mind, like Shakespeare would write or Goethe would write, but, as Mrs. Eddy says, were dictated by God, that they are so hopelessly original in their way that she would never dream to think that she had written it, means that the divine mind was the writer of those books. And that only then can we interpret those books aright if we know the whole structure of the divine mind. If we have the same mind which had dictated the book to Mrs. Eddy, we can also interpret the book aright, and in no other way. That's why some people will take up Science and Health and put it away and say, oh, it's all nonsense, it doesn't make sense, it's contradictory, and so on, contradicts the Bible, she contradicts herself, and so on, because they read it, and therefore interpret it, with a consciousness which is not formed by the divine mind. Consequently, we cannot read the textbook, nor the Bible, with any other mind, nor interpret it with any other mind, but with that mind which is God, which has written the book. That's the great problem. Now, in this case, you see, what we have to do is to put away all our material conceptions. We should put away all our preconceived notions, what the Bible wants to teach, what the textbook wants to teach, and try to establish in our consciousness first the structure of being. If we have the structure of being, just as I have shown you with the globe, with all its classifications, then only with that network on the textbook we can begin to grasp the meaning, the purpose of the textbook. Else we can't. This is a great mystery. It's a terrific mystery. So, if we want, therefore, to read the textbook as it is, we have to culture first the whole structure of being in our consciousness. And as I said, the very first thing to come out of the atomistic sense into a structural sense, into a scientific sense, is the linear thinking. So I start with the linear way, and the most important linear way of thinking is given right at the beginning of the Bible with the days of creation. There, through the 7 days of creation, an order of thought, a sequence of thought is given. Now, there is always a criticism which says that there is no such a order. That the authorities say that these days of creation are written not with the intention of giving an order or a definite order. Now we have to be sure that this is an order and that it is an irrevocable order and an unchangeable order. What did Mrs. Eddy say? She said, in its genesis, the science of creation is stated in mathematical order. She states herself that the genesis is stated in mathematical order, beginning with the lowest form and ascending the scale of being up to man. Here in this very sentence, one should have authority enough to prove that Mrs. Eddy could see that the writers of the days of creation were presenting a definite order of thought. Ascending, ascending, ascending in mathematical order. Not only does she say that, she speaks in the exegesis of the chapter Genesis. She speaks in the third day of creation that she says the third stage in the order of Christian science. She puts to the third day the sentence, the third stage in the order. Well, if the third day is the third stage, then certainly the first day is the first stage, and the second day is the second stage, and so forth, in the order, and she meant order, of Christian science. I think there is plenty of proof to show, really textually already, that what is given there is a definite order. Now, what is the purpose of this order? The purpose of the linear order of the 7 days of creation is to me the law of creativity. It's the law of creativity. the law of achievement, the law of evolution of an idea. It is showing in a sequence the steps taken by thought, how to arrive at the fulfilled idea, because the seventh day is the day of fulfillment. So we can see that these 7 days of creation must be a very important sequence, because everything in our life, what we do, is somehow to try to achieve a goal. It's the creativity within ourselves which is foremost in our work, in our life, in everything we do. We want to achieve something, we want to attain something, we want to reach a perfect goal. We want to come to new ideas, to perfect ideas. But how do we get there? And this is one of the greatest problems which today is in the forefront of the world. I don't know how much you do read books which concern the modern trend of thought. But today, everybody is seeking now for a law of creativity, how to bring forth new ideas. The scientists in various fields of thought, especially in cybernetics, in didactics, in advertising and so on, are asking themselves, we need new ideas, but how on earth do we get new ideas? That has never been investigated. Up to now, say up to the last 10 or 20 years, people have always felt there are a few outstanding people who just get new ideas, and these are the top people, and they bring forth new ideas, they bring the world forward. But the scientists of today come and say, if that is possible once, then there must be a law behind it, and if we find that law, then that law is learnable, applicable by everyone. And so this search for the law of creativity is one of the foremost problems that scientists have. Can you see? I'm always most impressed. When John Dolly, in the 30s, began to see the law of creativity through the 7 days of creation, at that time nobody in the world was asking the question, is there a general, universal law of creativity? And since then, you have dozens and dozens and dozens of books investigating, is there a law of creativity? You have Wertheimer, he's a German, but he lived in America and wrote in America on productive ideas, very great scientist, and so on, all seeing that there must be a law of creativity. Now, would you believe me, that when one investigates what they have found, that they have always 7 stages, that even those who have to do with cybernetics and therefore with programming, learning processes, have found out that there are 7 stages. 7 stages. All around. Can you see the beauty? When John Dolly and his students were giving years and years and years of study for the 7 days of creation, to see that there is a sequence, a linear development, a linear sequence of how, from the initial point of searching for a new idea, mind, the first stage, up to the 7th point where the idea in its perfection appears, that from that time on the whole world resounded with the same search. Can you see what I have tried to show with understanding and demonstration? We were not seeking a sevenfold step of that law of creativity because of a problem we wanted to solve, but because of love for truth, for knowing what is the structure of being. Are there laws and systems in being which are so universal that they concern everything? And now the world responds to it. That's demonstration. And the world responds to it. But this is a higher, a more purposeful demonstration than if we would have said, oh, I want to read the Bible and the Genesis and days of creation because I have an immediate problem at home, or so on, so on, so on. Can you see? The moment we touch the structure of being, a structure, at that point, the whole world, in all fields of science, will respond to it. There is only one sign. I can show you dozens of other signs during the next 2 weeks, where we can see that what we have done spiritually in the research of being itself, of the structure itself, has had an enormous reflection and resounding in the world. So, let's be clear about this law of creativity. I would like now to take with you that sheet of paper which you have, that chart, which is entitled The Law of Creativity. I think I can take it rather quickly because I can presume that most of you have studied the 7 days of creation and so are rather familiar with it. We just want to go through and see how this sequence is a logical sequence, an irresistible sequence. We have in the first column on the left the days of creation. And you know how the days of creation are beginning, let there be light, you have light, and how we can interpret that as let there be intelligence. But the second day comes and says let there be a firmament which divides the waters from the waters, and so we can interpret it as separation. The third is let the earth appear, the dry land appear, and then all the seed, the herb and the grass with the seed within itself. It has the identity within itself. It always reproduces itself the way it originally was. A tree for billions of years is the same tree. An acorn is an acorn over billions of years. It reproduces its own identity constantly. Nothing can change it. Has identity. Then the fourth day is the sun, the moon and the stars, giving a sense of system, of government. The fifth day is the moving creatures that have life, so we get life here. The sixth day is the day of man, which has dominion. And the seventh day is the day of rest, of fulfillment. Now, is this a logical sequence, or is this just an interpretation? As it stands here in this first column, and as I have taken it through, I have just interpreted the biblical symbols in new metaphysical language. That's all what I have done up to now. This is not yet a sequence. This is just an enumeration, saying the first day and the second day and the third day. An enumeration is not a sequence. So the sequence is given through interpretation. through that which is not written, through that which is not explicitly said in the text. And because it is not explicitly said, because we have to carry it in between, the Christian scientists don't accept it. They reject it and say, this is not the sequence, this is just an interpretation. And therefore, just as if you read a Hamlet or so, we can see the meaning of it and the reason of it and the purpose of the play by combining those sentences and seeing how one follows the other and why is the one following the other, only by this interpretation, by the carrying in between of our sense, we can see that it is a sequence. What sequence? Can that sequence be altered? Well, if it is a day of creation, if it's creation, everything starts with a new light. Without a new thought, without searching for something new, nothing happens. So the very first thing is always light, is always a new thought, is always an intelligent thought, because an unintelligent, a wrong question will never find an answer. So everything starts with that light, with intelligence, with the right idea. Now, if we start rightly with intelligence, we can't get anywhere if we don't separate this right idea from all that is not right. We need at once a separation. We need at once that sense which puts away, which separates, which clears away all that is not in line with this true idea. And so we can't get any further in this development if we mix up everything again. We have somehow to purify our thought and separate and put away from our thought everything which is not in line with this new light. Then we will find that this pure light, this pure intelligence, is having the seed within itself. Only then, when it is no more mixed up, can something new take shape and form. Only then the identity of that which has always been there can come to light, can be manifested. So can you see already in these three, we have a perfect order, which says, if I have a new idea, then, that's the first day, then I must see that I keep this idea separate from all other foreign illusions and foreign arguments and contrary arguments. I can't constantly mix up everything. I must have that pure. And if I have it separate from foreign elements, then something begins to mature. It's so to say the incubating stage, where something new is forming itself. You can ask, how? I don't know. It's in being. That's the law in being that it does. That suddenly something comes out which says, this is it. It becomes definite and has identity. If it comes to that point, we have to be very careful not to regard it as our idea, but to see that we put it back into the principle, the fourth day. That we put it right back there where principle governs the situation, where we see it as an idea of principle, where we free it from our personal sense, from our personal responsibility, and see that idea which has been born and has taken shape and identity is an idea that belongs to principle. And principle works it out. Principle operates it now. And only then, when it is closed with principle, governed by principle, we experience the fifth day. It's a day of life, that it lives. that it really begins to live in us, and that it becomes so alive and so tangible and so near to our heart that there is no mistake about it. The moment it begins to live, that idea, you will see that each new idea has terrific dominion. It has such terrific power that it will look after itself. It has such power, such dynamic power, that it has really dominion over the whole world. That it has dominion over everything that wants to obstruct it, has dominion over everything that wants to keep it down, to prevent it, to subdue it, and so on. And with that dominion, you feel, I got it. You get a sense of rest, a sense of fulfillment of the seventh day. So in this way, I just quickly summarized that wonderful law of creativity. Mr. Dolly, now first of all, he saw the second column there, the third degree. You know that third degree comes from the scientific translation of Mortal Mind on page 116. It's under the heading Understanding there and gives seven stages. Again, Mrs. Eddy shows that when, through the first translation, the divine principle urges itself upon humanity, urges itself upon ignorance, that then that divine principle begins to act in the way that it brings forth the highest and purest sense of understanding. But how? And there again we find those seven stages. They are, as you see them in the second column, wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, holiness. If you think about them, I can't do it here because this chart alone here would take a whole week to explain properly. But if we think about them, you can see again how it gives the sequence, the linear sequence of how a new idea really is born to us. It begins with wisdom. That wisdom, that new idea must be kept pure, purity. Without keeping it pure, this idea cannot grow, cannot unfold. And so purity of thought is necessary. The moment we have purity of thought, then something definite appears. You see, always the third is the great mystery. The third is always that which says, the moment we have put the first and second point right, then that which was already since eternity there as identity is showing itself forth. It's like the acorn, you say acorn, beginning to become an oak tree. The identity is still there. So it is. So we have wisdom as the first point. If we keep that wisdom pure, if we keep that vision clear, if we are pure in our motives, in our desires, and so on, are pure in it, then through that purity something very definite will appear, spiritual understanding. That wisdom becomes now clear, definite understanding. That understanding has spiritual power because it's of the nature of principle. The moment you have understanding, you have spiritual power. We can't have spiritual power before we have understanding. Can you see the irresistibility of it? We can't change the order. Only then, when we have spiritual understanding, it gathers momentum, becomes dynamic, has spiritual power. When it has spiritual power, it says at once to us, you have to lay down your mortal sense. That's love, with a small L. That love which says, now you have to give up all your human sense of things, you have to lay down the mortal sense of things. Herein is love, that you lay down the mortal for the idea. And in that measure, you see, we have that love. that willingness to let principle operate the way it wants to operate. That's our standpoint of love. If we let principle operate the way principle wants to operate, it gives us health, wholeness, true form. It doesn't give us health if we don't have that love before, which says, I want to have that health which I want. I want to have that demonstration which I want. Before that true sense of form, of health, of wholeness, of true integrity can be born to us, before that can be born to us, we must have that sense of love which says, not my will be done, but thy will be done. Of laying down all our material motives, ambitions, purposes, aims, etc. Then true health, true form, true wholeness is being formed within us. And that brings us to the last point of holiness.